Welcome to this podcast of Sunday nights on ABC Local Radio. I hope you enjoy the program.
Thanks for staying with us. And if you've just joined us, we're about to embark on our signpost segment. Every so often, Luke Geary pops in to see us. He's a solicitor and is the instigator and managing partner of Salvo's Legal. So this is your moment for some free legal advice on air, basically. Luke, newly married, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Noel.
And congratulations.
Thank you.
Luke, not quite so happy as being married and going on honeymoon. You've got a couple of cases here for us about arrests.
Yeah.
And what happens with arresting. Now, this is... not everybody gets arrested or has a child who's arrested, but people do.
Yes.
And in your centre, you've come up with a couple of cases here where things have sort of gone awry. And this is sort of, I suppose, advice on what you do when you're in trouble with the law.
Indeed, or if your family member or friend who calls you in for support might be in trouble and they want a little bit of advice from you.
Or your 14-year-old is not in Bali being arrested with marijuana, but it's in Sydney where you've got some control.
Yeah, that's right.
That sort of thing. So, in fact, your first case is a 14-year-old.
Yeah, well, it's actually not one of my cases, but it's one somebody which we saw in the newspapers just a few days ago. It was a very provocative case, and I think for our listeners out there tonight, it's quite an interesting one.
Now, this is a boy who'd gone to his counsellor, yes?
Yeah, that's right.
Made a confession to his counsellor.
That's right.
And how does the story go?
Well, he'd gone to his school counsellor, and the counsellor just sort of jovially said, "How are you going? What have you been up to?" And the boy said to the counsellor, "Oh, well, I just held up a servo recently and stabbed the attendant. I don't know if I'll be coming back to school or not."
Go on.
And I guess doing the right thing, obviously, the school teacher very delicately dealt with the situation, but it was, and I guess this is the legal, technical legal issue, is that it was after the school teacher had that revealed to him, the school teacher made a statement. The statement, in the due course, was used by the prosecution in the charge against the boy.
The kid made admission that I stabbed an attendant. That's what the key here
Correct.
Is. He's made an admission to a teacher.
Go Correct. On, yeah. And all the controversy was, in this instance, was because the teacher had not given the child a caution that anything he said during the course of their conversation might be used
against Miranda.
Him. Well, as it's popularly known in America, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Then
the judge ultimately used her discretion to not allow that statement by the counsellor and that confession by the boy into evidence. And so the boy was found not guilty ultimately.
He was acquitted, even though it appears that he admitted to his teacher that he'd done it.
Yeah.
So there was no other evidence to show that he did except his said he did, and it may have been big noting or something else, and the judge took the view that it was probably was.
Well, the judge held that it was unfairly prejudicial to the boy.
So it was just totally irrelevant. Couldn't be talked to?
Exactly. It was not allowed into evidence. And the judge has certain powers given to her under the Evidence Act to allow certain situations a level of discretion as to whether or not the evidence is more probative than it might be prejudicial to an individual. And in this instance, the judge in the district court made that call not to allow that statement into evidence.
Is this particular to New South Wales, this situation?
No, the Evidence Act is, there's what's called a uniform evidence law, and each of the states has fairly similarly reflected provisions in this sort of area.
So when you noted that New South Wales Premier Barry O'Farrell's off to the Attorney General seeking advice, I'm correct with saying, you know, we need to sort this out. That means that in other states, they need to be off to their respective attorneys general or whatever it is that they're called in that state.
Yeah, I guess it's a very delicate issue because not only are we dealing with what seems to be an admission in circumstances where the individual concerned was ultimately held not guilty because the admission was not allowed into evidence, but really, and this is the interesting thing, it was evidence by a child. And so a 14-year-old isn't someone of legal age, not 18 and over, they're not an adult. The provisions in relation to children need to be enforced fairly carefully because children, as a class of people, are generally more vulnerable. So it's a very difficult situation. And I thought maybe tonight, Noel, we might talk about some of the procedures that happen during the course of someone being arrested or someone having an interaction with the police and what might be in their interest or what might not be in their interest, whether to say or do or what not to say or what not to do, whether to have a support person present, whether to call a lawyer.
Oh, look, I think that's a great idea, because there are certainly parents out there who from time to time find that their ideal 13-year-old or 14-year-old has somehow made what shall we call tastefully a misjudgment. And the law has decided that not only is this a misjudgment, this is going to get them into big trouble. And that's legal trouble. And I see you've prepared some aspects, because you also always very kindly prepare for us here a brief of what you're interested in going to do for the week. Now, the Salvos are doing stuff. You're basically giving access to law to people who can't necessarily afford it through your organisation, aren't you?
Yeah, that's what you're doing. We've got two very separate law firms. One's a free law firm, which practices in the areas of crime, family and children's law, debt, housing, Centrelink, and migration and refugee law, and that's free for everyone to get free advice. And in certain circumstances where people pass a particular means and merits test, that is where we think there's a real issue there that they need a lawyer and they can't afford a lawyer, we'll represent them for free.
And this is basically the church providing law assistance. That's exactly what it is, isn't it?
I guess the real bite to it is the money's not coming from the church as essentially in the long term. It's coming from individuals and businesses and government out there who use our other firm, Salvos Legal, as a commercial law firm. So conveyancing, wills and estates.
You set up a way to actually fund it and do all that sort of stuff. Now, so cautioning. Say somebody comes in to you and their kid's been in big trouble. Now, a caution. Now, you hear about a caution, but what exactly is it?
It's a warning to people to say that they don't need to say or do anything, but if they do choose to say or do something, then it can be used against them in evidence.
It's a Miranda.
Very similarly what you see on Law
what
and
you
Order.
Will be, I know. Most of us know more about American law than about our own.
I think that's right.
But a caution is that.
Yeah.
A caution is, if you say anything to me, I'm going to use it in a court of law. Can,
that's
may,
right.
or may. Okay, right. So that's a caution.
Yeah.
And then, now, okay, so if somebody's getting arrested, if you're son or daughter is in trouble, what happens?
Well, usually they'll be, say it's, let's say someone who's a little bit over 18, so it makes it a little bit easier to deal with adults,
okay.
Because that's a
adults,
broader
right.
area of society, and then we might just refine a little bit to children. A typical example might be someone out there on a Friday night at a pub has a few too many drinks and does or says something stupid, maybe ends up in a fight. Police come to the park, to the bar, they arrest the person who's involved. That person, with a few in them, has a little bit of a relaxed attitude to things and might say a few things, but not appreciating that the police, who
relaxed.
Are there in their company, are very diligent note takers.
Right.
So anything they say, obviously, has been taken down.
Something abusive, for example.
Usually
something
a few words that only have four letters in them.
But
then I guess the second stage, so that's the first stage where they actually get physically taken into custody. They might be put in the back of a car and then taken down to the police station. And so that's the informal part of it. Then when they get there, they might be charged with, for example, an assault or using offensive language or resisting an arrest, for example. And at that point, the person will be offered an opportunity for an interview with the police.
Now, resisting arrest is most likely to happen when you have already been drinking or under the influence.
That's very common.
Very commonly when it's going to happen, when the judgment's all wrong.
Yeah.
And resisting arrest is never a good idea, is it, basically?
Never. Even if you find your mind is 100% persuaded to the fact that you are entirely innocent,
you
should never resist arrest, because itself is an offence.
You heard it here on Sunday nights. Do not resist being arrested when it happens. Now, the point is, though, when you're being arrested, could a person be arrested for questioning? Is that
You can't be arrested solely for the purpose of questioning, but police can ask you if you'd like to participate in an interview, even if you haven't been arrested. So they might have suspicion that an offence has been committed, but perhaps not enough evidence, or they might not yet have made that call to take someone into custody.
Would you mind coming down to the station?
Yeah, exactly.
And can you say yes or no?
Precisely. It's entirely within your control to say yes or no.
And so you should ask, are you arresting me, if they're saying that? And
indeed.
And they'll say no.
Indeed.
Okay, now that sounds like...
And even if they do arrest you and take you down to the police station, this is, I guess, the heart of what a lot of people ask us, is, do I have to say something? And the answer, very firmly in the law, is no. You do have to participate in an interview to an extent. You have to sit down and give your name, your date of birth, your address. Then they'll ask you if you'd like to be interviewed, and you can say yes or you can say no. The way the interview works is there'll be two police officers, usually yourself. There'll be a tape recorder or perhaps even a video. At the end of the interview, you'll be given a copy of the CD now or DVD, and you can take that away with you, give it to your legal advisor. You'll be offered an opportunity to call someone, to call a lawyer if you like. If you'd like to have a legal representative present with you, that's something that you won't have any difficulty doing.
It depends on the nature of the offence, I presume.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes people will entirely
alleged
say,
defense.
This is this is something so trivial, I don't want to bother anyone, I'll happily admit the fact that I'm guilty of this offence.
I did urinate in public, officer,
perhaps,
for example.
Perhaps.
Yes.
Hopefully we won't have to hear you say that again, Noel.
Yeah, but, no, I didn't. I'm not. That was not an admission. That was a hypothetical. But as opposed to, I did smash into the car and steal it, officer.
Yeah.
These are different. You know,
yeah, they're different categories. So yeah. You've got summary offences and more serious or indictable offences. And I guess the message I'd like everyone to hear tonight is people always say, should I give a statement? Now, a lot of criminal lawyers out there will say flat out no. And ultimately, that's my general position as well. Some people, though, will say to you, but I can prove to them I wasn't even in the state or I wasn't even in the country at
the
time.
Then give a statement.
And then it might be appropriate because you might, within proper parameters, that is, have a lawyer with you so that the conversation or the interview can be controlled in a way that's fair and doesn't, you know, go off into tangents where other areas of investigation might be conducted. But generally, my starting point for a lot of clients, particularly clients who've had some form of drink or they might be affected by another substance, is categorically no, don't give a statement. At a later time, you're always welcome to give a statement to the police after you've had an opportunity for legal advice or had an opportunity to calm down.
Particularly if you're intoxicated, you don't want to give a statement.
Yeah, and police generally won't interview someone if they're particularly intoxicated, but someone who might have had a couple of drinks. They might not think they're affected, but of course they're affected to some extent.
Or be highly emotional after some event.
And that's not unusual at all.
Yeah, yeah,
there's a lot of adrenaline going through, a lot of stress, a lot of anxiety. All those sorts of things can really affect your judgment in answering critical questions.
Don't give statement. Delay is the principle. I'll come back later to give the statement.
Yeah, there's no prejudice to the police investigation if you're to have a day or two to think about it, speak to a lawyer, get some advice. And I think in everyone's circumstances, that can only be beneficial. But people will be the ones that make that call for themselves, but that's the advice I want to give.
Now, so you say you get down to the station, so you have been arrested, you're down there, they say, they're going to interview you.
Mm.
That's different to the statement, isn't it, the interview?
No, I guess, sometimes how people can get tripped up. Anything that's said in the context of a conversation with a police officer can be taken down and used against them.
Right.
Whether it's that conversation just before you get into the back of the car and you might say or yell or do something which you might later regret, or whether it's in a very formal environment sitting across the table with a tape recorder in front of you, or whether it's in the hallway at the police station. The police have got a very defined job to do, and that job is to be professional observers, professional note takers, and to provide all the evidence to the prosecutors at the appropriate time. So you just got to be very careful what you say.
Silence is your best policy unless you're in your best frame of mind, you have good advice or representation.
Yeah.
And that's how it should go.
I mean, ultimately, I think that's the point everyone should take away.
What if police, you know, if you're saying you don't want to answer questions and that sort of stuff, and they act as if they're offended? You know, you're ruining everything. You know, you're being very uncooperative here, sir. This could go very badly, you know, really.
It's not always a game where we need to agree with each other, I guess, Noel. So sometimes they may be offended, but ultimately, if you say something which you might not have thought about carefully, it may not even be correct. You're the one that's going to have to bear the brunt of that in the future. So I guess for the sake of avoiding pleasing everyone, people should still respect their own silence and the right to silence.
What if you ask a question you know you don't want to answer?
Well, yeah. I guess you shouldn't. I guess another rule is you shouldn't participate in an interview selectively.
You either go in or not.
Precisely. And if you're going to go into an interview, my recommendation is bring a representative with you.
Lawyer sitting next to you.
Yeah.
And you look at your lawyer like they do on Law and Order, and the lawyer goes, don't answer that question.
Well, I mean, I guess it's a little
can
less...
I have a moment with my client?
There's a little less tension in the room often, but guiding the conversation and the interview in a way which leads you to believe there is some level of comfort in the answers you're giving, because you're the one that's going to be stuck with them in 6 months, 12 months down the track when it comes time to go to court, if that happens to be the case. And you need to be sure that your answers are honest. Otherwise, and I'll say this, the police are very good at catching out a liar. They're exceptional at it. So that's the other reason why people should think before they speak.
Well, let's go back to the 14-year-old we started off with, you know, the boy who'd confessed to his teacher that robbed a service station and stabbed the... This is not a good boy, by the way, but had said all that.
Well, those are the things that he's now been acquitted of.
He's been acquitted of, but saying those things just sounds just naughty anyway. But let's go back to... if the police did want to interview that 14-year-old, can they do it for a start, or do the parents have to be there? What's the story?
A child can't be interviewed in isolation, so they need to be in the presence of an adult, whether that's a parent or another support person. Depends on the individual child's situation. I mean, the child may have parents who are able to assist him or her. They may not have anyone, and in those circumstances, it would be like a social worker or a support person of that kind who's a specialist in dealing with children in vulnerable situations.
But the police can speak to the child. They can't necessarily interview. It could be a one-way address.
There shouldn't be any conversation with a child of a formal nature. I mean, they can certainly talk to a child, but they won't talk to the child about the issues at hand.
Could they have gone up to the school to talk to the kid?
Schools are usually a place of last resort for the purposes of an interview. There's a police code of practice. It's... acronym is CRIME, funnily enough, Custody, Rights, Investigation, Management and Evidence. And that code of practice states that police should avoid interviewing a child at school and that children should generally be interviewed in a home environment. I mean, the reason for that, obviously, is kids are vulnerable. Kids don't have their defences about them, and a home is a place where it might minimise emotions, might allow the child to feel more safe. Yeah, so I think that's an important thing for dealing with children.
No, I apologise. I didn't mean before to suggest that the 14-year-old boy was guilty just before because he said that. I didn't mean to say that.
No, of course.
Well, is there anything important we've missed here? Because you've done a lot of preparing here.
Well, I guess I owe that to a colleague of mine, Melinda Wong. She's a very, very good lawyer that's assisting me. Can I just share with people a bit of a story if we've got a couple of minutes?
Sure, you've got a minute.
I've got a minute. All right. Perfect example of what not to say or what to keep in your mind about anything that you do say the police will make a note of. I acted for an African guy who was from Burundi, an East African country, newly settled refugee in Australia. Him and his wife settled in a fairly white neighbourhood, and there was a lot of tension about the fact that the family had moved in there, so people were, I guess, at high alert. The family had an argument, but it wasn't really an argument because of their cultural situation, but it was perceived as an argument.
Right.
So one of the neighbours called the police. Police arrived. The family were completely confused as to why the police had arrived. The police come into the house and they try to settle what they thought was a domestic disturbance. There was no domestic disturbance at all. But the husband had said words to the effect of phone, and was sort of waving it up and down, and the police thought that he was admitting to having hit his wife with the phone. He was then taken into custody. The police at the time, unfortunately, weren't able to secure an interpreter in his language, which was Kirundian, very difficult language to get an interpreter in.
Yeah.
He was held in custody for 8 days.
Good heavens.
The only person that went to visit him in jail was his wife. The whole family was separated because of this misinterpretation of an utterance that was made. I got alerted by the Salvation Army out in Auburn that this man was sitting in jail for 8 days and hadn't been brought before a magistrate.
So you could actually get out there and help then?
So we went out there and the staff at the jail said that they weren't able to talk to him because they couldn't get an interpreter. And so I made an arrangement to have him brought to court the next day, which was the Monday. And between Central Station and Burwood Station, I found in the phone book an interpreter who could be available to turn up to court 40 minutes later. Naturally, the magistrate who heard the bail application that morning was completely understanding, sympathetic. He immediately was released from bail. We came up to the hearing and the matter was completely dismissed because the facts came out.
But, so even phone is too much to say, waving a phone.
Exactly. You have to be very careful what you say because everything you say will be noted.
Look, we've got to leave it there. Many thanks. God bless the salvos.
Thanks, Noel. Appreciate it.
This has been a podcast of Sunday Nights on ABC Local Radio. Thank you for listening.